to be occupied by squatter.
So did it, was there a discussion of the difficulty of mixing or combining someone or an occupancy that they feel is legal, that they don't agree with the zoning, or there's some issue that they predate the zoning versus vacant, because it's not, that is not the same thing?
Well, they'd be taking up an enforcement action, so the code officer would either hit them for the illegal occupancy under the zoning code and probably, if he deemed it, the vacant buildings violation. And it's up to the person charged or challenged to take an appeal to the Zoning Board of Appeals and or challenge it in a court proceeding.
Okay. Item 7 under Part B, says an owner can be prosecuted for non-compliance under Section 9312. What is that?
Well, that's probably a typo. That reference will have to be changed to the enforcement section. Probably 147.8.
Oh, so it's referring to the in this. Like,
it's a broken cross link. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Good. That's an easy one.
Thank you for catching that.
Okay. Under vacant building fees, 5 indicates that the costs incurred by the village will be passed along to the owner. This includes the removal of the vacant building. But there seems to be a whole section left out. What triggers that action? At what point is the village entitled to go in to demolish the building?
Well, technically the village would have to get, it says, including reasonable legal fees. So they'd have to authorize through condemnation and or court action, get an order from a court that allows the village to do that. It just provides the basis for any fees that the village has to be assessed against the property as a lien.
So is the thrust behind this part of the law is to address the very long-lasting, what might be abandoned buildings, certainly vacant buildings, to have the village step in?
Right.
And this is the method the village will use, and it may or may not get the money.
True. Okay. There are instances when we've had this happen before and in other municipalities, if a building or a lot is unsecured, we can secure it with like a fencing, a snow fence. We can put signage on it to keep people out. That's usually unsightly and the neighbors don't like it after a while. So sometimes it gets to be further where the village has to go in and maybe board up a building or actually physically secure a building. Technically, if the owner fights us on that, we would have to get a warrant to do that. We'd have to get a warrant to enter. We've done that as well too here. And so there's a legal process that has to be gauged as you deal with the owner and deal with the problem. And this just provides that if the building department were to, and the mayor were to have DPW secure a building or go buy plywood and secure it, they keep a listing of any and all expenditures and that's assessed as a lien, just like taxes against the property. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that, and the village would be out of pocket, so to speak, for it unless they actually have it in their legislation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then Section J refers to fees associated with registering vacant buildings. What are those fees?
Sorry, where was that?
H. Oh, go ahead, you're on. Down to the Section J. That you can add on to the total cost of the building, the fees associated with registering the vacant building. But I didn't see anywhere where, what are the costs to register a vacant building?
I'm sorry, I'm not following which section.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking at H,
No.
Which is the vacant building fees.
Right, so I and then J, and in J, that last sentence in J, says the fees associated with registering such vacant buildings.
Time of closing. So that requires if someone has a building on the vacant register and then they sell it to someone else, this requires the purchaser to fill out a new and complete vacant building application registration form. And then at the transfer titles, any fees associated with registered vacant building. So if there's anything due for first year, second year, third year, fourth year, or fifth year from H2, usually at a closing, they will adjust any taxes, assessments, and fees. And if there's gonna be anything due from the new owner, it has to be paid at that time. Obviously, you know, you're hoping when someone sells a vacant property subject to registration, they inform the purchaser. It may or may not be a typical thing. So having that language in there makes the purchaser liable to us for those fees if they're unpaid from the seller.
Okay, and what are the fees?
For first year, $1,000, second year, $2,000, third year, $3,000, fourth year, $4,000, and fifth and each succeeding year thereafter, $5,000.
Yeah, no, I read that. Those are fine. This says fees. So I couldn't find anywhere. There's a lot of discussion about how you have to register a vacant building, but then the reference to fees is only in this section J, and I couldn't find what are the fees.
Well, typically, annually, the board goes through its building department fees, its inspection fees, and it has a list or a resolution. And I'm assuming Lee would recommend to the board an application fee or a registration fee or a processing fee. I'm not sure if that's been finalized as to how that's gonna be handled, but that's usually an annual resolution of the village. If they wanna charge $25 for the privilege of processing an application, or $50, or and you probably wanna look at the fees you're already charging and do that.
Okay, so that hasn't been established yet?
No.
Okay,
no.
All right.
Those building department fees are supposed to be corresponding to the actual time and effort that the village expends on it. So if the building department official makes $25 an hour and it takes him a half an hour to process, approve, review an application, then you want your fees to correspond to your expenditure on it.
Okay.
So the $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, that's fines for?
Not fines, because you can't charge fines unless you go to court, charge them with something, and prove them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. We have set this up as a registration and a fee for an annual building, so just don't use the vernacular fine.
Okay, it's a fee, that's what I thought, but.
Yep.
Oh, okay, so.
So I think, isn't then what Tom was looking for, or was those fees?
Yeah, I mean, if you buy a building that I've had vacant for 4 years, then on the fifth year, this law requires you to file application for a vacant building as the new owner. At the time the title transfers, if at the fifth year is due, if it's actually due whenever the application or the previous year expired, then you would be on the hook, so to speak, for the fees going forward.
Right. So then we wouldn't, would we have a registration fee on top of that, or isn't that the registration fee?
I mean, you can make it that way if you want. I can look and see exactly what the city of Hudson is doing, but I'm assuming they're charging like an administrative permitting fee.
It's gotta be like a
permit. Yeah, like
permit.
A $25 application fee or something.
Right, because one of the questions I had is the way it's written now is that $1,000 says it has to be commensurate with the costs, and I was wondering if we can argue that.
Well, I'd given you samples with different possible fees, and it was the decision to go with the higher fees to try and dissuade the vacancy.
Right.
So because as you can revise these going forward and reduce them if it starts to deal with the problem of the level of vacancy you're having, but you're doing a lot of cleanup. You've actually hired another, call him a deputy code officer.
Yes.
Right.
You've put someone else on your payroll to try and address these issues in the village. So you're incurring a budgetary expense.
So we could argue, we can support that.
Sure.
That cost.
And again, with all the vacant buildings around since March, I've been having Lee write letters to the owners of these vacant buildings. Some return, some don't. To ask what their process is gonna be and where they are in the process. And for instance, is Eagle Street. I mean, I've talked to the man several times on the phone personally, and he says it's an insurance company thing. It's insured. Well, it's been vacant for 3 years, burned out for 3 years. It's time. This law is being put into place, so the people that are making our village look bad at least have to pay something for making it look bad. We're gonna get something out of it one way or another.
I have a comment about that after my question, so but we'll come back to it. And my last question is, are the village-owned properties subject to the law?
No, they'd be exempt.
And that's on what basis?
Because municipalities are exempt from their own zoning, usually. I mean, they can make a finding to that effect. I don't know if you're aware of any properties that would be subject to this.
the garage? Maybe not.
No, they only want their storage building, and that's not vacant, we've got stuff in there, so we still use it.
Okay, so this law is coming under the zoning code? You said zoning.
No, the municipality would be exempt from its own regulations generally, they're not gonna.
Any regulation, not just zoning.
Well, it's on a case-by-case basis, and if there's an argument that they are subject to it, they can opt out of it due to the Monroe analysis, like the county did when they purchased the Aquamic School years ago, when the county did when they put the courthouse in the temporary courthouse building by the library. So there's a process that a municipality should be exempt in its own judgment if it applies it, or it's exempt per se, you really gotta look at it case by case. As the mayor said, using Canal Street as a storage building, it's a governmental building put to a governmental purpose, so I wouldn't deem that as a vacant building under this law.
So yeah, switching to comments, I just have three. Was there a discussion between vacant and abandoned? Because the legislation seems to make the assumption that there's gonna be some interest, no matter how minimal, on the part of an owner. But I think there's some cases that we can establish that a building is abandoned. So was there a discussion about that?
Yeah, there's actually a provision in our code now, and then there's New York State Executive Law on abandoned buildings, which is what we used to tear down a building recently and in our prior history. So this is to keep the people that are buying up housing stock and not developing it and not doing anything with it, to spur them on to do something with it. If you have a property that is literally abandoned, like the one we're dealing with that has been burnt or damaged, and we've dealt with them here before pretty aggressively, then there's other legal avenues for the board to take action on. To get an abandoned owner to do anything, or the village can step in. And that's a judgment call on the Board of Trustees, because sometimes there's an expense related that we don't think we're gonna recoup, but it's in the public's interest, best interest to do that, either demolition or bidding. I mean, Lehigh probably has done 2 building demolitions, I think, at least, and we get saddled with the asbestos abatement, the hauling away, and as I said, all these laws throw in there that any and all expenses have become a lien against the property, but what are you gonna sell a vacant lot for, a half acre vacant lot for? $20,000 to $40,000? I mean, it's got water and sewer and a hole in the ground. But when it costs $60,000 to $70,000 to take it down and there was a mortgage on it for $20,000 or $30,000 to start with, the board needs to, you know, use its judgment on the ones they're gonna go after, so to speak. And this board has set up in its budgetary process when we did a tax enforcement action to collect back due taxes, they allocated that money for village cleanup. That was one of the mayor's initiatives. So the recent buildings that they've taken down have been funded by past due tax collection to try and improve the tax base by making the village better.
Now, he's got most of that right, but we don't use all the past due tax collections. We only use the fines and the service charges, the penalties, to go into that account. The past due taxes go to the general fund like they're supposed to, but the penalties go into the fund that we have set up to take these buildings down.
Okay. So I just want to be sure, though, that there is abandonment is separate from vacant. That is two different issues in the board to decide.
Yeah, I mean, it's a distinction for sure, but under the definition of vacant building, it says unoccupied and unsecured, so if it's abandoned, it would fall into the vacant building registry.
Right. Yeah.
Our remedy would be to write the last registered owner at the last registered tax address and say, oh, you failed to register this vacant building with us, and you could be subject to $2,000, whatever the registration fee would be, which they wouldn't pay. But then we'd have to assess our other legal options as far as, well, now do we want to treat it as abandoned and take it down? Have to start a proceeding to do that. I mean, there's only so much you can do by administration and regulation like this versus providing an owner of property legal due process under the law, where they have notice and opportunity to be heard and they can challenge it. In a true abandonment, we can go in and do what we need to do. And we need to gauge each and every one of those situations uniquely, and they make a legal decision as to how they want to go forward on it.
The best answer to your question, I think, is right there. It doesn't specify abandoned or vacant. It just 148-1.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just
just ask, what's the difference of that? What's eminent domain?
Eminent domain is a whole nother section of New York state law, and if we needed a portion of your backyard to put a sewer line in, we would offer to purchase that piece of property at an appraised value from you, and if you disagreed, if we've proved that it's necessary for a governmental public purpose, we can take it, and that's what's known as eminent domain. So we go to court, and the court would find that it is necessary for the public purpose and deem the village can take the property and title to that piece that they need goes. The issue of how much is compensated can be fought out later in court if it needs to be, but it allows a project to go forward.
Oh, I thought sometimes, and I knew in other places that it meant, you know, they could tear it down.
Yeah, normally eminent domain's used for, you know, infrastructure projects. You know, they need a road, need a something built.
Okay. So let me just, in a scenario where it's a vacant building, it appears to be vacant, it doesn't get registered, it goes on for years. Is that a scenario where the board might say, oh, this is an abandoned building?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Just trying to figure out.
It's kind of like a big Venn diagram. I'm not trying to end run you, but there's overlap between a few provisions, and this is just another tool to make people with vacant properties, you know, have a plan to revitalize them or pay money to not do.
Yeah.
We're just trying to hold the people accountable.
Yeah.
For making our village look bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Within the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. The second comment is just is on insurance, and you know there are two pathways on property insurance. It's the full replacement cost because you in fact intend to rebuild. But then there's also I forget what they call it. It's like a cash out. It's a lower premium. But it's a kind of basically you take the money and run scenario. So I don't think you can address this situation in a law, but perhaps it should be at least a discussion with the insurance industry. It particularly pertains to the section 148-4 under exemptions. This particular scenario is not covered in those exemptions. I don't know how many situations in Vermont fall under that category, where someone has just taken the insurance money and ran with it, because it's just simply, you're just taking that amount of money, they're in a better situation than trying to demolish, try to resell, just take that money and go. So in my mind, the insurance company shouldn't issue that payment until the building is demolished.
And with that being said, with all the fires that we've had, and everyone is another learning experience for us. Now we have gotten with insurance guys, and we have gotten with adjusters, and Lee has the bullet point questions to ask when the fire happens. He automatically gets on the phone and calls the insurance company now and say, this is what happened in our village, and what are you going to do about it? So everybody is on board at the point of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we didn't have that.
Okay.
You know, it worked well with the ballot. I mean, that was really the first one that we had all our ducks in a row on. You see the ballot's building's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Only because he was more cooperative than anybody else we've ever worked with.
Cooperative owner. So.
And that helped.
Yeah,
but we do have the right questions to ask now and the right people to contact.
Okay.
And then just to answer your component of, is there anything we can do to require or hold up a payment? And we can, unfortunately.
Right.
So all the insurance people get to select what they want and how they want their policy premiums and their coverages to be, and we're a third party to that contract, and we can't really impose ourselves on it.
But if the insurance company knows about it before the homeowner calls, that there's going to be problems.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do help out.
Okay. I mean, because it's the municipality then that suffers.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue to deal with the abandonment is you've probably all heard of the zombie law in New York State now. So that was passed to make mortgage lenders and those sorts of things responsible for abandoned properties where people run away from them. That program worked horrifically for the first years that it was adopted. And now, actually, if you go on their website, they actually have a number you can call where they will investigate and assist and find the mortgage lender. Because we had one in our history, I don't want to malign any particular bank, but XYZ Bank. And you call their corporate offices in Chicago and they just pass you around and never return a call. So they were kind of ducking. So the, I think the New York State Banking Department, Department of Insurance got a little more aggressive on it now. So that helps on those cases.
And my last comment is on the compliance fees, which we've already talked about. It's interesting, between the first year and the second year, it doubles. But then the third year, it doesn't. I think each year it should double. Because otherwise, if let's say it's a dispute, an estate dispute, it's going to go on for decades. It's just a payment that's, you know, part of business. So I think for that to really have some clout, it, since you are doubling it on the first and second year, you should just continue to double it.
And now you won't get an argument from me, huh?
I just think we went with the higher fees out of the box, and I wouldn't want to push them so high that if you're doubling it every year, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. It's like snow shoveling. You don't want to go that far.
There is precedent, the New York City law for non-compliance with existing buildings in the energy code. That really hits them. It doubles every year. And it gives them a long time to get into compliance, something like 6 or 7 years.
Is the problem that it's a registration fee and not a fine?
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, I think my suggestion, I see the point, and I think it's a valid point. I think with the couple of laws we had as samples, we took the highest fees.
Mm-hmm.
I think give it a shot, see how it works, see if it clears these up. If you find people are just paying the fees and leaving them vacant, then obviously they need to be reevaluated.
I don't think you're going to see that.
No, I think based upon the buildings and the issue, the ones you have issues with, the landlord tenants that may or may not fill them, would be, you know, if they're dealing with a property that's between $100,000 and $200,000 in total value, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm for trying it. We've got to do something. And this is a start. It's going on too long, and there's getting to be more and more of them every day. Okay. Susan, did you have something else?
No, I didn't have time to look at this yet. So,
okay.
But I'm all for this. I'm ready to.
Peter?
I have a couple of questions. First of all, is there any property that will be grandfathered? No. So existing properties that are in this category are subject to this ordinance. Okay. Good.
Well, they're all getting it. The question I have, Rob, is when does it start? If we know a building's been vacant for 5 years, do we start off with a 5 year, or can we?
No, I think you start with the first year, because this is the first year you have the law in the books, so to speak. As far as the effective date of the law, we usually make it effective upon filing with the New York State Department of State. However, you've got your decisional process on generating an application, deciding if there's an application fee, working with your two code officers, when can they start implementing this. So there's going to be a lag time and getting it rolling, so to speak. But as far as effectiveness, we make it effective when we file it with the state. So the law's on the books. So vacant building owners are on notice that they could be subject to the program.
Yeah, I have a couple more comments. On 48-3C3, references made to the owner will be required to file an extension for the revised rehabilitation plan, etc. What I'm concerned with is that an endless series of extensions for some may be just a cost of doing business. So is that you've already given them 365 days, so then they file another 365 and another 365. So this is an open end to, an open door to non-compliance. How will that be addressed to stop the people, maybe say, file an extension that would be good for 90 days and non-renewable?
Yeah, I mean, you could do that. You could put in more specifics there. I think the intention here is to treat it like they do a building permit. So the building department issues a building permit based upon plans and specifications, and then the owner's supposed to go forward and do the work. When the 6 months or the year, depending on the municipality and the building permit expires, they can come in and renew it. But at a certain point, it's the building department that's going to say, you've made no progress on that permit that was issued, and you're just holding a permit open. So I'm going to require, or I'm going to give you this one extension, and then after that, I'm not going to renew your building permit anymore, and you'll be in violation. Then we move to the whole side of prosecuting violations of the provision. I mean, you could put in more milestones or steps there, but I think the way the samples that we had seen were basically treating it like a building permit and leaving it in the building department's discretion. Obviously, if you've had a rehabilitation plan, the plan's not, you file it, it's accepted, and you're supposed to work on it within 365 days, and you come back at the end of the year and have done nothing. That's going to be in the building department's discretion whether they offer an extension or grant the extension, or start to prosecute it as, you know, building code, property code, maintenance violations.
And our building department is on the same page with what we're trying to do here. We've had several meetings with him. He knows what we're trying to do. He knows we're trying to make the buildings look better.
All right, just as long as it's not an open door to...
It won't be.
...drawing this up. The next comment, which pertains to the implications of this, it seems to me, not only in Philmont, but Philmont has an opportunity to become a real leader in the county, if not more generally in the state, when you have properties like this that are abandoned and it ends up, they walk away from it. So there's a piece of property. I think it's worth considering that this property then be viewed as an opportunity for income-based housing. The problem we have is there's not enough so-called affordable housing. So young people have to move out. They can't buy a property here, it's too expensive. Very difficult finding rentals that are reasonable in price, et cetera. So if the village takes over certain properties and they can put up a decent multifamily residence, assuming the zoning allows multifamily in that location, that is highly energy efficient and so forth, like Habitat for Humanity has done in Valencia, I think this is a real advantage for keeping younger people would have some option of living in a place that is quite possibly far more affordable. And the city or the village would have acquired this land perhaps at fairly low cost. So I hope you on the trustees will consider this possibility of addressing this national crisis right here in Philmont by converting these abandoned places and having someone that's responsible that can build these highly efficient, energy efficient buildings and having affordable housing. It's an idea, obviously, it's germane to this, but not part of it. So I think this is really a good idea, and I hope you think about using this land to keep people in the town.
Thanks.
Get a bond issue.
Anybody else? I guess I'm going to call for a motion to close the public hearing.
So move.
Second.
Now, we're going to open the regular meeting. Seven o'clock.